Welcome to Diving Into Writing with me, Lucinda Pebre, and Marielle Smith. Join us on our writing journey.
Hi, Marielle.
Hey, Lou.
We both made it by the skin of our teeth.
Oh, what a day. And it's not over yet, I believe.
No. Although you're further ahead than me, but yeah.
Yeah, but at least your work day is over.
True.
My stress is kitten related, and that they just got really sick and they should be moving in 2 days. And now it's questionable whether they can move to the foster place I had in mind, depending on how sick they are. And I'm leaving the day after. But maybe that we're feeling like this is a really good time to talk about perfectionism.
Yay. Something I do suffer from, perfectionism. But before we talk about perfectionism, did you do the exercise?
Yes, I did. Did you?
I did.
Because I remember reminding you 2 days after we said we would keep each other accountable.
Yes, and I had forgotten. But I was so ill because I had the booster COVID vaccination as part of a research trial. And I was so ill, which was a shock because I'm never ill with vaccines.
And you were actually, when I was worried about getting ill, you're like, you'll be fine. I felt like you were behind it, right? Like you pussy.
Yes, because they always go into great depth about the possible side effects you might get, but the chances are they're not that high that you're going to be ill at all. And even with the flu vaccination, and some years are worse than others, I've never had it. I've never been bad. I've never had a temperature or anything with it. And this did hit me, yeah.
Maybe it's all those vaccines accumulated.
Maybe it is.
They're like, she's never gotten anything. Maybe it's her time now.
Well, hopefully there's no room for COVID in my system now.
I actually think it's just karma from you talking about how Marcus was sick after his and telling me, you'll be fine. I think it's just karma.
Well, Marcus wasn't really sick. Marcus was just, I think this headache might be related to the vaccine. And I think I might feel a bit funny. It was just like that. He wasn't really sick.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? For the second one, I had I still have some tingling in my arm.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So I didn't have that the first time, but the first time I was actually sick. Like I was in the bathroom holding a basin thinking, I'm going to throw up now. So that was my first jab. And the second one, it was just, I had a little bump from the injection and that was it.
Do you know what? I haven't got anything. They gave me a full-sized, 30-centimeter ruler to measure any reactions on my arm. I was like, how big a reaction are you expecting?
Just a small swollen arm or something.
I can see the little dot where they put it in, but that was it. It was just my temperature just went up and then I had all the feeling that you get with that, you know. And it doesn't help that it's been so hot here.
Yeah, I get that. Well, welcome to the club.
I want to know about
what
you found out.
Okay, so when I was doing the comparison, when I was looking at or trying to note, when I was comparing myself to others, it was actually not really writing related. Like I have, my anxiety is high right now because I'm flying.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to get back into, because my anxiety has been high for a long time now. So I found myself comparing myself and like to just people that I saw, and like my hairdresser, and I'm like, all these people were saying that they also were nervous about things like flying and meeting people. And I'm like, okay, but you're still doing it. So why can you do it?
Yeah.
And why does it freak me out?
Yeah.
So I was doing a lot of that. Like, you look like you're, like, you tell me that you're fine, like you're, that you're not fine, right? You tell me that these things cause you anxiety as well, but I see you do them. So how do you do it? Like, they must have had, their anxiety must be less, or they must have figured something out, or maybe they know how to deal with it. And I'm just a huge failure because I still don't know. Or, I mean, I got myself out of anxiety. Like, I used to have really bad anxiety years ago. So I there was a lot of anger towards myself and shame that I kind of lost grip on that and sort of like slid back down.
Mm.
Right? Like, it is a slippery slope, and I feel like I kind of like, you know, tripped and just went all the way down. So I judge myself really for being in that same situation I was years ago. So I just look around and I see people and I'm just like, how come? Like, what do you know about life? Or what do you know about why you're here, or how to deal with these things? Like, how confident are you on a scale of 1 to 10 compared to me that you seem so chilled and cool when you're doing this? Well, I feel like I'm dying inside.
Well, you know, when I think about what we talked about last time, and it was about the fact that you don't necessarily know the circumstances for people, you've only got what they show you.
Yeah. And that's what I was thinking too.
I think you're going to have to give them a questionnaire, do like an assessment on them to find out how bad their anxiety is in the first place. Well, and what strategies they use.
I can only make a comparison when I actually ask them, okay, so you do feel fear. So what happens exactly to you when you still do the thing?
Because
that's my, like, they're not telling me about majorly embarrassing public panic attacks. But of course, that might have happened, or every time they do these things that I do as well, they do feel like they're dying inside.
And the other thing is, you describe it as majorly embarrassing, but would people outside of you see it the same way?
Probably not, because if it happened to somebody else in front of me, I would not think, oh, that's so embarrassing. I would feel so sorry for that person.
Exactly.
Not in a pity way, but in a, oh, girl, I get you.
And it might not look as bad to other people as to how you feel it looks.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, is that when I tell people that I have social anxiety, I'm an introvert, they always are a bit like, what? So I have the same masking, right? Like,
yeah.
Even if I feel, or even when I feel, like I had it in teaching, like for the first few years I was teaching, I always, in the bus to the university, I was like hoping that the bus would derail and just crashes, because then I didn't have to stand in front of this, you know, this whole lecture hall and give my talk.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
When colleagues were present because I was like guest lecturing at their course or something, they would come to me and said, I don't know how you do it. I mean, the confidence that you radiate when you're up there, it's so natural. And I was like, I did not breathe for 90 minutes straight. Like, what do you mean? Yeah. So it's also, I see other people and I think, oh, but you look like you've got it all together. So exactly. I compare myself to that. But
yeah, exactly.
To a lot of people, I look like I know exactly what I'm doing and I feel super chill doing it. And I'm like, no.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So that did hit me, that I was filling it in for other people when I was reflecting on what I'm comparing myself to. And of course, the same goes for writing, right? But I have the comparison so much less there, maybe because I'm more confident. Like, I had it more when I was not doing a regular fiction writing.
Yeah.
And I read how many people wrote per day on their fiction, like how much time they spent. I would compare myself to others and go like, well, you know, maybe they, I don't know, have a supportive partner and don't live on their own and have their own business. So I would sort of like look at that and be like, well, you know, I cannot do it because my circumstances are so different, even though I didn't know their circumstances.
It's about not judging yourself ultimately, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
So and forgiving yourself, because you know how I write every day. Yeah. I didn't when I was ill. I really didn't when I was ill. No, but I do feel because that has knocked me off a little bit. I'm reading Amy's novel at the minute, so you know, to give feedback,
developmental editing,
yes doing a bit more of that at the moment, so that's competing for my time on top of everything else. So it's not that I compare myself to other people and how much they're writing, it's that I judge myself for not doing it.
But that's what we also discussed last week, is that and this is how comparisonitis shows up in my writing life as well. Like I compare myself to myself.
Yes, yes.
But I can get really judgy if I'm not getting the same results as I got last month, 3 months ago, last year.
And even though I know I was ill, for goodness sake. So yeah. I got a good reason. I still felt the need to judge myself. I'm just thinking that would be another good exercise to do at some point. Looking at how often you judge yourself and how often you judge other people, you know, unnecessary judgment.
Yeah. So it's like, and I know we'll be talking about Brené Brown a little bit later as well. It's like what she says, like talk to yourself like you talk to someone you love.
Yeah.
And I think that's very hard.
Yeah.
So you did your comparison, you're comparing.
Yes, and I actually do not do it that much when I'm at work, when I'm busy, because I'm just too busy to do it. But, you know, when it comes to spending time on social media or, you know, time off bit, that's the danger for me.
Yeah, because then there's the brain space to go.
Yeah, to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't do it with writing. And I don't know if that's because I'm mindful of it. Part of it is that I accept where I am with my writing. Do you know what I mean? I don't aspire to be any great literary writer. I just aspire to write the stuff that I like to read.
Yeah. So but that's the point, right? If you're confident in where you are.
Yeah.
Then you won't have the need to compare yourself to others. I think the reason I don't compare myself to other writers is because I know so many in person.
Yeah, that's true.
I can totally get, if you're like a new author and you get into like a Facebook group and all you see are like the success stories and you go like, shit. But I'm like, I have so many writer friends, and also just from being, for example, at 20 books to 50K in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
I'm like, between the sessions, there's so much, like, you can just share, like, the struggles and stuff. So you know that, like, I remember seeing people and I'm like, oh, this is like some, like, really famous person, right?
Yeah.
And then they actually sit down with you like half an hour later at your table and just go like, oh, like I'm writing this book and it's driving me crazy. And I think I should just take do another career or something.
Yeah. And that's true.
So I think that's like, I've met so many of the people that a lot of people like look up to. Yeah. Right. And I realize that they are struggling and they have the exact same struggles that I do. So I also know, I know the veneer.
Yeah.
So I don't really, if I see these very success stories, that doesn't really do anything with me.
But you know, when you're reading a book that you're just so into, don't you just want to write like the author?
Yeah, but I still think that can be healthy comparison, because I think it becomes comparisonitis when you actually start thinking, why did that idea go to that person and not
to you? Okay.
Right. And so I just read this series and I'm actually reading it again, which hardly happens to me, and I'm still enjoying it, even though I know exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
So yeah. Now I'm just like, I'm reading it and I'm like, just reading this book makes me a better writer. So I'm just glad that I ran into this series.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can compare myself in this is what I aspire to. But I think it's comparisonitis if I would do, I'm never going to write like this. Or look at typo. Ha ha, she's not perfect either.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's the unhealthy.
And even in my time off, even in my time on social media, I don't actually do it that much. If I'm being completely honest, I don't really do it that much. And I think it comes down to the fact that I am generally happy with who I am. Even being younger or thinner or, you know, having bigger boobs, none of those things even appeal to me.
But that's like when I moved to Cyprus, I was so on top of the world. That's how I felt. I was like, I'm not afraid of anything. And so I never did anything like it either. I was just completely curious about other people. There was like, if somebody knew something that I didn't know, I was just like this sponge. And I was like, well, tell me more.
Yeah.
So it's for me really not feeling that great. That's kind of when it sets in. And I go like,
yeah,
like, why do you seem like you like, what is that? Like, and why do I keep failing at this thing? And you seem to be such a natural.
It's such a shame that we can't feel great all the time.
isn't it? Yeah. Or that we know just like how to get back.
Yeah.
Love that. Because I kind of feel like I have to do the whole thing I did back then again.
All the work.
I'm like, shouldn't I get like a shortcut? No. Just going through it again. Yeah.
It's interesting though. This bit's interesting. Taking a step back and looking.
Yeah, because I did, when I did reflect on it, I did realize immediately, oh, wait, I'm filling these things in for these people. And this is what you said last time, I think, as well, is that when you look at like social media or whatever, people show a certain version of themselves.
Mm.
So I did realize like, oh, wait, but I only see like this side of them. I don't know what's going on underneath the surface. And actually, people always say the same thing about me. That I look super confident. And in the past, people have said, like, I was kind of anxious to meet you because you come across as a bit, like, I assumed you were arrogant. Because you're that confident. And of course, that's also a woman's thing, right? If a woman is confident.
Yeah.
They immediately start thinking, gosh, she's arrogant. And then they're like, oh, but now I know you. I'm like, you're not arrogant at all.
Yeah.
So that's like my outside is really showing the world I've got this.
Yeah.
It makes sense that other people have the same thing going on.
Yeah.
So it was really useful, yeah?
Yeah.
So perfectionism.
Yeah, this is something that I struggle with.
In what way? Like, how does it show up?
Oh, my goodness. I'll tell you, one of the smallest ways it shows up is the need to have new notebooks all the time.
Is that why that's coming from?
Yeah, what it is it's about starting again. Starting with neater writing, not making mistakes, having a more organized brain, not making a mess of things, starting afresh. So even to that point, and new diaries as well.
Yeah, I'm always like, this time I'm gonna keep, like, I'm only using this pen.
Yeah.
And then so the first few pages of all my notebooks and my planners look like immaculate.
Yes, that's it.
And then real life kicked in and my brain. And then it's just a mess.
I've got loads of half-started notebooks because I've needed a new one for a new idea, because this time my idea is going to be more organized and it's going to lead to better planning, more efficient, you know, outline, whatever.
Yeah.
And it doesn't quite work because it all degenerates into the same old muddled mess that that is my brain.
Yeah, and like for me, it's also like I feel like having spent almost a decade as a teacher has really affected my handwriting. It's like a curse. Like it's so awful. So I'm like, I used to have like such neat handwriting. Right. Yeah. Now it's like it's starting to look more and more like my mom's scribbles.
You see, I quite like my handwriting, but no one and not many other people can read it. And I always think, well, that's really obvious what that is. You know, when they go, oh, what's this you've written? And I'm like, well, that's really obvious. I don't know why you're asking.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm more like, I know I wrote this in half an hour ago, but I do not know what it says. That's more me these days. But like when I take the time, as when I start a new planner or a new journal or a new notebook, then everybody can read my writing.
Yeah.
Or the first two pages or so.
Yeah.
Oh, so I get that. So how about your writing?
You
also said like you're not aspiring to write like some literary.
No. But it's taken me a long time to kind of let go, and I still want to over edit each bit, you know, rather than getting the story down. I still want to go back and just go, oh, that's a better way to say that, or that sounds a bit crap, or you know, that sort of messing on when you might cut the whole lot anyway.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it's so instead of just writing to the end.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I do writing to the end. Like I don't stop in between to go back and edit.
Well, I'm better at it, but I still want to because I enjoy that playing with words and the editing part more than I do getting the story down.
Yeah, I have troubles getting the story down.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's all great in my head, but then actually starting the first draft is really hard for me. It's really slow.
Yeah.
And then the editing, like where I sort of thrive. I just enjoy that so much.
Yeah.
But I'm a perfectionist in the editing as well, because I know rationally that every book has typos. Right? Like, I remember teaching and we had this handbook and it was like about public relations or something. And it said pubic relations.
Brilliant.
And none of my students picked up on it. Like I was just having a laugh in front of the classroom and none of them had read it. So they were like giggling once I stumbled over it. But they, on the first time of reading, none of them had gotten. But it's like when I make a mistake in one of my books and I see it later, I do go, you idiot.
Yeah.
I do that always.
Right? Yeah, it's kind of a bit heart-stopping, isn't it?
Yeah.
When it's out there, I mean.
But it's even with like, so for example, I'm putting a few books, I published my paperbacks through Amazon right now, and I'm starting to move wide so that they're available through all bookshops. So all bookshops can order them. And I woke up like 2 weeks ago, and with this idea, like I put the wrong year in the copyright page because I copied it from the versions already on Amazon, but these ones have new ISBNs. So the year should be 2021.
Yeah.
And one book said 2019, the other said 2020. So I felt so bad because I already feel like I'm underpaying my virtual assistant to do this job. And now I had to sort of like send her a new manuscript, two new manuscripts, and have asked her to upload it again.
Yeah.
And she was just like, oh, that's perfectly fine. Just send me the manuscripts and I'll upload them. She was like really sort of like blasé about it. And I was just like, I felt so stupid. Because I'm like, why didn't I think of that? So I am trying to get to the point that no matter how massive your checklist before, there will be errors and you will be making changes.
Yeah. Accepting that things cannot be perfect and it's not a perfect world. And actually, writing a story is a messy business. It's not linear, it's not neat, it's not, or it shouldn't be, because it shouldn't be, should it? Because if it was, it's more like a factual book than something.
Yeah, it's more like an academic paper or something.
Yeah, than something with emotion in it.
Yeah. No, but and it's I think for me it's because where these books will be published, so this is Ingram Spark, if there is an error and it's blatant, right, and you want to change it, you have to pay a fee.
Yeah.
So I'm much more chill. Like when I see a mistake in one of my books on Amazon, it's easier for me to laugh to myself and be like, yeah, that wasn't clever. Okay, let me just upload a new version of the manuscript.
Yeah.
But there is this talk also online, people saying, well, you cannot make any mistakes in your Ingram Spark manuscript. And of course, at the end of the day, if it's a really bad mistake, you just pay the fee.
Yeah, and do it. Yeah.
Well, like the world doesn't stop spinning. It's just going to cost you, what is it, $45 or something. So it's not the end of the world. But in my head, I'm like, you made a grave almost made a really grave mistake, and you're not a professional, and who do you think you are? That's how it goes in my head.
Yeah.
Which is lovely.
And when you talk about perfectionism, I think the dangers are that you're going to beat yourself up.
Yeah. And as you know, I have a book by Brené Brown here, and she actually talks about that. Shall I just read it? Because she's trying to define perfectionism and how it's actually related to shame.
Oh, yeah.
Even though that's not a straightforward link for lots of us.
No.
She's always, it's really fun reading her work, how she tries to come up with definitions to sort of ring through all the research that she's done.
Yeah.
So she's developing a definition that actually she said that captures what it is and what it does. So she says, perfectionism is not the same thing as striving to be your best. Perfectionism is not about healthy achievement and growth. Perfectionism is the belief that if we live perfect, look perfect, and act perfect, we can minimize or avoid the pain of blame, judgment, and shame. It's a shield. Perfectionism is a 20-ton shield that we lug around thinking it will protect us when, in fact, it's a thing that's really preventing us from taking flight.
Yeah.
So that's the first part. But then comes what you just said, like it's really something you can use to beat yourself up, right? So she says, perfectionism is not self-improvement. Perfectionism is at its core about trying to earn approval and acceptance. Most perfectionists were raised being praised for achievement and performance, like grades, manners, rule following, people pleasing, appearance, sports. Somewhere along the way, we adopt this dangerous and debilitating belief system. I am what I accomplish and how well I accomplish it. You know, please perform perfect. And she says, healthy striving is self-focused. How can I improve? And perfectionism is other-focused. What will they think?
Do you know, you just made me feel so much better about my messy house.
Did I? That's good.
Yeah.
Because it gives you more time to write. No, but why? How?
Because why am I striving to have a tidy house. I could just embrace it as it is because of the link to me, I suppose, and what it says about me. And we do have that as women, don't we? So yes. It's kind of like if Marcus's family are coming round, not that they have for a couple of years, but it would reflect on me, not him, if the house is a mess.
Yeah, because you're supposed, as a woman, you're supposed to care about that stuff.
Yeah, but I work. That's when women didn't work, isn't it? That's all they did was the house. That's why you've got that link and the child raising. But now we work, don't we? And do the child raising and do the house.
Like, we are told that as women, we can now have it all. But the idea is that we should have it all. We should have the career. We should have the children. We should still have the tidy house. We should still spend enough time with our partners and our friends and be sexy for our partners, have a great sex life. Like people think that, like, with second wave feminism came freedom, but actually what came was even more obligations. I do think that, like, especially if you are a mother, that wanting to do that perfectly can hamper your other. Like, how many women are there who feel guilty for wanting to write because they should just be happy being a mother?
Yeah. Right? Or that they shouldn't be taking time away from the children and the house and the job and the whatever else in order to write.
Yeah. Or you don't get to writing because, like you said, like, the house is not. So the whole idea that you can only sit down to write when, you know, the kids are fat. They're fed.
They'll be fat if they're fed well.
Yes, that's very true. And depending on what you feed them, also a different topic entirely. But, you know, the kids are fed. You know, your husband has his lunch to work. The house is neat and tidy. You've done all your social calls. You've volunteered here and there. And then you have time to write, right? It's very... And then, of course, you sit down to write and your mother calls or your sister or your best friend or your neighbor or...
I
think it's more difficult for women to say no when I'm writing, I'm writing.
It's good to practice, though.
Yeah. But it is like most of my clients struggle with... So most of my clients are women. And those with kids, they struggle with, actually, no, one of them, only one of them ever who had kids had no problem telling the kids, I'm writing now. All the other ones, they've all had struggles. For example, one of them was struggling with, you know, COVID and having to work at home, but her husband was also working from home. And then what used to be her office was now also his office. So her time in it was limited. And then when she finally got it, the kids kept running, kept knocking on the door, or not even knocking on the door, just like running inside and just demanding her attention.
Yeah.
So after we had our session, she emailed me like a week later that she had sat down with the kids and her husband, and actually with the kids together, the kids made a drawing for her. And if the drawing was on the door, they were not allowed to disturb mommy.
Ah, good one.
Yeah, so it took a while before they actually got used to it. But just, she didn't go, you cannot disturb me. She explained why this was important to her. Yeah. And that they needed to find a way together so she could get some time by herself. And the kids decided, or the kids offered, so what if we make like a drawing, and when that's on your door, when you put that on the door, we know not to enter. It was the kids' idea. So I'm like, it's not that the kids mind you doing your own thing. It's just that we don't claim that time, or we are not comfortable saying this is me time.
Yeah, it's true. Well, I'm not so bad, but I think I'm quite lucky that Marcus is the same. So he gets it, you know, when I need to be the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fortunately, he doesn't see it as any different. But yeah, wider family, different matter.
Yeah. And that's, I think that for me was the switch for me when I started writing in the mornings, as I did like a few months ago. For me, that's kind of, nobody's up yet.
Yes, to hassle you.
Right, so nobody's gonna message me. And of course, it should be like, if I just turn off my phone for 2 hours to like focus on my writing, that should be completely fine, right? Like I should be able to just say, even though I'm at home because my office is at home, I should be able to just like turn off my phone and be like, I'm not available. That's really hard, especially in this day and age.
Mm.
But it is easy for me to do it in the morning because I'm like, my partner is still asleep. My family is an hour behind. Most of my clients are actually in the US, so they're even more behind. So they're definitely still asleep. So that's why I do that. So that's also something to do about wanting to be available, which I think women also have. It's one of those things that women need to be able to do or do well, because we need to show that we're caring creatures. So we need to give a shit about things, basically.
But equally, I think that self-care is a skill.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's something that I used to be really bad at. But especially with COVID and, you know, with the whole working from home and how things can spiral, you know, in terms of work taking over your life.
Yeah.
I've really put boundaries in place for my work life, and it does make me take care of myself as well.
So, yeah, I was thinking that when you said self-care, in my head I went like, and by self-care she means having those boundaries.
It is the boundaries. Actually, do you know what? I just need to go for a walk, or I just need to get out for a little while because it's just too intense or there's too much. It is very different working from home.
Yes, it is.
I think you need different skills.
Yeah, because some people can't do it, right?
I know.
And I'm like, for me, it's always been. So with my ex, the struggle was that he couldn't believe that I was actually doing something.
Yeah, my boss is a bit like that.
Yeah, so he got really upset because like, I would be working from home and he'd come home from his job and like I didn't do the dishwasher or I didn't have the food ready. And then he would be like, what? And I go, I've been working all day. And he's like, you've been home all day. And I said, well, some people can actually manage, right? Like that we can actually do something.
Yeah.
And he can do it now. He does it now because of COVID. He had to learn.
Yeah.
Now he's fine. But he couldn't grasp the idea of how you could do both, or not both, how you could just be in the house in your space. And not also do the housework.
Or the, the assumption is that you're not doing anything because you're working from home. So,
or at least you're working less. And I'm like, I work much less. Like I don't need to go to a cafe to write because that'll just distract me. I will do less if I've tried it. Like also to socialize. Like I've tried working with other people. Like. They're like, I'm today. I'm at this coffee place. Do you want to join? And I just record my laptop, and that I just don't do much.
Yeah, yeah.
So for me, it's safe to just be in my house. Like actually, and usually I do get the laundry done somewhere in between, or and I still do more than if I was in an office. Or
yeah, I don't. I have an. This is a self expectation. This. I have an expectation that I'm going to do that. So I'll think, oh, right, I'll just work for a bit and then I'll, you know, hoover or I'll tidy up. And I get a bit frustrated with myself that I don't manage to do that because there's too many things to do.
That depends on your job, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like for me, most of my job is thinking, and I do need a break from that once in a while.
Yeah, but my point is that it does come down to perfectionism again, yeah, because yeah, you're not just trying to do the same job but at home. You're then trying to fit in the housework and the cooking I put tea in the slow cooker at lunchtime and went to the shops and got some food. And yeah, so I did manage to get that in, but I should have had a relaxing lunch perhaps.
Yeah, but it's funny because actually, so research has shown that it can be much more productive to work from home, especially because you take these little breaks. So now that's like the new discourse. And then you're like, I'm not even able to do that. You're not a sort of, you know, there's this ideal or this expectation. And again, you're like, well, other people do this. Comparisonitis again. Must be a link between comparisonitis and perfectionism.
Oh, yes. Well, portraying yourself as perfect. I do have some Facebook friends that do portray themselves as perfect, as in only the best photos. Their kids are all lined up. They're all primed for the photos. That you can tell they're just brought up to be expected to do a photo at every activity and every time they go to the park and what have you.
Oh, yeah, I always think, oh, we didn't take a selfie after we've done something.
I find it a bit disturbing, actually, for the kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But also just for me, like, I'm like, oh, it's because Instagram loves it when you show your face. Right? So that's what they say. If you want to have success on Instagram, you need to be a bit personal.
Okay.
I'm always thinking, what's the, like, how long has it been since I showed my face? Oh, okay. Oh, shit. I have to look through some pictures and just upload something. I do that because I'm not, like, when I post, it's about my business or it's about my cats.
Can't you do cats instead? Can't I do Lily instead? She's my face.
Well, I think my cat pictures get about 10 times as many likes. So,
yeah, because they're furry.
This does work, yes, and they're cute. Yeah. Yeah. So it's funny how and this is also something that Brené Brown says. It's like we think that we need to be perfect in order to be successful, but it's actually, she says, research shows that perfectionism hampers success. So it's actually what's keeping us from being successful.
Yeah, I can see that. You can see that with just writing a novel from start to finish. If you're forever editing your first line, you're never going to get to the end.
Yeah. And even if you make it to the end, and if you just do like a million drafts because it's still not perfect.
Yeah.
You still haven't caught, like, there's this meme, right, saying, I don't know if it shows up in my editor groups on Facebook every now and again. It says something like, the best way to catch typos is by uploading the book on your platform and publishing it. That's like the best way to find lingering typos. I'm like, yeah, that's so true.
Oh. How does perfectionism affect goal setting then?
I think in different ways, because I think depending on the type of perfectionism that you're suffering from, and this is also something Brené Brown says, it's like a scale, right? It's not like some people suffer from perfectionism and others don't.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so ingrained, I think, also in our society, especially in the achievement thing. Like one of the reasons I was really ready to leave the university, it was because it was becoming like a neoliberal machine. So it's all about grade averages and it's all about how many people passed your class. So me going, well, yeah, half of them failed because this year they were really not into the work. that was not the right answer.
Yeah.
If half of them failed, I had done something wrong. I didn't have a batch of sucky 18-year-olds who weren't ready to actually be at university. I was doing something wrong, right? So I do think it's really part of our system. So I think on the one hand, it could actually stop you from setting certain goals because you're like my ex, for example, always wanted to play the guitar. But at one point he got to an age that he was like, if I start playing guitar now, I'll never be as good as like Slash.
No, I think even if he started when he was very young, he probably wouldn't have had a great chance.
I think most people won't ever be as good as Slash. Yeah. Right? So he did get a guitar and did some online lesson things, but never really picked it up. So I think it can keep you from setting certain goals.
Yeah.
Because you're already thinking, I will never achieve this thing that I must achieve. I'm like, can you not just have fun playing with your guitar? Like, can that not just be a nice hobby? Does it have to be, do you have to be able to achieve perfection, even if it was, if it just was like one song, right? Like, can you just like, sort of like, you know, do your thing with your guitar? But on the other hand, I think it can stop you from achieving goals that you did set because you get so stuck in the details.
Yeah.
And maybe are also like, I mean, every writer I know is afraid to hit publish.
That's true.
And I think for some, it's because for me, it's I'm always afraid with other people that they're finally going to find out that I suck. But I think for others, it's going to be, what if I'm not ready? What if I need to read it again? What if there's too many typos?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, because the book is not perfect. Yeah. So I think it can go both ways. Like some goals you might not set at all because you're just afraid you're never going to get where you think you should be to call something a success.
Yeah.
And then there's setting the goals, but then just, getting so caught up that you never actually achieve, or that you're not, and maybe you do achieve it, but not in time. So then you have something else to beat yourself up with that it took you twice or thrice as long.
There are so many pitfalls. It's amazing that we ever publish anything.
But this is the, like, there are people, writers, authors who said, like, whenever you feel like you're failing or whatever, do realize that at least you finished that book and you hit publish. Do you know, first of all, how many people never actually write the end? Like, everybody wants to write a book, but very few people actually write a book. And then there is getting that book from the drawer in a shape good enough to show it to the public. That's, again, a very small slice of the, I was going to say slice because I see it as a pie now, of the people who actually finish the book and then do the work to make it good enough and then have the guts to hit publish.
Yeah.
It's like a tiny, tiny group again of the tiny group that ever finishes a novel or a fiction book or a poetry book or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it is kind of special, I would say.
I think that if people listen to our podcast and work through all these issues, they'll have a much better chance.
I hope so. They'll be good. They'll be good. Yeah. I probably have perfectionist issues around the podcast as well.
Yeah, well, it's not overly edited.
No, but I don't have to worry about that because that's your job.
Yeah, and you don't listen to it afterwards.
Yes, that too. Yeah. But I do have, like with the other podcast I'm setting up, right? That's that we have completely different goals with that one than we have with this one. And I do think that that does influence how fast we're going a little bit. Like, we do want to make sure that what we say comes across, instead of just, you know, hitting record and just go, hi, how are you?
I think that's partly the topic, though, isn't it? You can't.
It's very researched, and it's a complex and touchy topic. So
yeah,
and then we do have to make sure we bring across the research in a particular way.
Yeah,
because it is controversial.
And you've got to make sure you've got your facts right as well, haven't you? Because you wouldn't want to be like spouting misinformation.
No, definitely not. Yes. And this podcast is much more about our direct experiences as writers.
Yeah. Not that we're spouting misinformation.
No, it's true. But I do, like, so I do, also maybe I do compare there with other people as well, like how, because so many people have podcasts. Let's not go there. Let's go to the questions before I go off on another tangent.
Okay. In what way does perfectionism prevent you achieving your goals?
Okay. Yes, you got that one. Okay. So that's our first question. So our other question is, do you sometimes feel that perfectionism sort of gets in the way of your success?
So our next episode is going to be on a different topic.
Yes, this is our last episode for now on goal setting. And we have yet to figure out what we're going to talk about next.
But don't you worry, we'll come out with something.
Oh, yes. I'm not worried about that at all.
Okay, then. Bye.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, or visit our website at divingintowriting.com. We'd love to hear from you, and if you'd like to leave us a review, we'd be ever so grateful. Bye for now.